everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Jo Minardi. And guys, it's Men's Fashion Week!
Thrill. Yes, later on in the show, we have an interview with the one, the only, Pharrell, who is, of course, the creative director of Louis Vuitton Menswear.
I mean, I've had people pick me up on separate threads about the new Vuitton collection, because obviously it's always, it's kind of become the big moment of the week. Jose, I want to know how you felt about it, what you thought of it.
Hello. I thought when you were saying the one and only was about me.
It was going to be, and then I was teeing.
I was like, oh, okay then.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that's
I'm
right.
The one sitting next to you, but okay.
Welcome to the one, the only, Jose Criales Unzueta.
Thank you. What's interesting about Vuitton is that men's used to be later in the week. And then last season in June for his debut, they changed it to the first show. Or like, well, not the
Are
first show.
Are they allowed
show,
but to do like, that? They just get to flex that way?
Well, when you're Vuitton, you can do a lot
okay,
of things.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, so like, they're not like the first show, but they're the first night.
Mm-hmm.
So they're technically the first show, really. This is technically his like sophomore collection, his like the second full collection. But it's his third show because he did one in Hong Kong for pre-fall.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, I thought about this one, and it's something that has sort of lingered in my mind, is that, like, because the idea was, like, cowboys, and, like, he worked with the Dakota and Lakota Native Nations, like, what's interesting about this is that it's a distinctly, like, American idea that is coming to Paris, right? And that's always
going to be... Yeah, describe the vibe of the show for people who haven't seen it.
So the show was literally just about sort of the idea of the American Western landscape. The core of the idea, as far as I understand, is Pharrell sort of looking into the genesis of the American Western vernacular in terms of clothing, but also of workwear. And that really goes back to the first cowboys, right? There's almost been
those were my favorite pieces, the workwear pieces.
The workwear was
the kind of,
I agree. It was the most successful.
That seems very you, Choma. I can see you.
I know. Right? I love a bit of
workwear. She's ready for work.
She's a worker bee.
Yeah, I'm holding out for that distressed Prada Bond jacket.
Exactly. That's what we all want. But it's interesting because I think, you know, workwear has become such like a big idea across the board in menswear specifically. So it's not surprising in a sense, but the show in itself was really, I thought, distinctly American. Like the boots, there were a bunch of boots, workwear boots, but also Western boots. The boots, for example, like the workwear ones were in collaboration with Timberland. And then the Western
Those are gonna fly.
Fly.
They did a Timberland?
Yes, they did Timberland collaboration.
That is Hypebeast catnip.
That is literally Hypebeast catnip. Woo. It's crazy. So yes, there was Timberland.
How did I miss that?
There was a lot to see. And then the other ones, the more Western ones, were made in collaboration with Goodyear. So the whole thing really is like deeply American, right? Like the entire sort of like all of the motifs used. It's so interesting to me because yes, Vuitton is like a global brand, right? But it's interesting that you have this sort of like American multi-hyphenate celebrity running it, at least the men's part. And then on top of that, you have these explorations that are also deeply American. Like I'm always curious to hear how that resonates with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
What I always find interesting, and I think specifically about Pharrell, is going to be very interesting looking forward, like moving forward. And something that Virgil had already started at Vuitton is that you can do so much at a brand like that.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when you looked at his show, it was like the background was almost like it looked like the National American History Museum, right? Like it's like the capability that they have to contextualize the ideas and to realize them is really actually crazy. Like whether you love it or not.
It's always kind of like this combination of of Pharrell's obsessions.
You're right.
Him walking out in a 10-gallon hat and he's been waltzing around town in it, for me, yeah, was fab.
What's a 10-gallon hat? He's a big cowboy hat?
Yeah,
a big cowboy hat.
And for me, his was the best look, to a
his
sense.
His look.
Because
killed.
It's so cool. You know what
okay.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think what's interesting
effortless.
Too, exactly.
If and, you can make a 10-gallon hat,
but that's the Pharrell magic, right? Like, how do you make yeah. like a pair of Tiffany's pearl glasses effortless?
Right.
That's sort of what's interesting, which is like, you know, the show is sort of this fully realized idea that at some point you're almost like, oh my God, are we actually playing cowboys? Like, it really feels like, you know, you commit to this idea to like almost costumey. Like extends, but then when you piece them apart, even the people that were attending the show, some of the celebrities that got to wear looks, you see them more contextualized in the real world. Mm. And that's why I love the Pharrell look, because it's like, it's a hat, it's a t-shirt tucked into the flare jeans.
Yeah.
Like, it is such a cool version of it. And I think, you know, in June, in the men's shows, we're going to see a lot of like this idea in street style.
Yeah.
But obviously like paired back to like, just the essence of the styling of it all, which is workwear meets cowboy meets Vuitton.
I mean, I think he's really good with outerwear and accessories. Like, if you look at the, you know, the bandana print on the Speedy, I thought that was really smart. And like, I'm really gagging about the Timberlands.
Yeah.
Like, who wouldn't want like LV Tims?
I mean, it's fab.
Well, so I have a question though. So clearly this is referencing a very, a caricature of Americana. It's it's very much 1940s cowboys and Indians is sort of the old school, you know, it's the indigenous craft and tropes and looks are definitely incorporated.
Yeah.
How is he pulling this off in a respectful way? How is this not appropriating indigenous fashion?
I actually do have like a hot take on this.
Oh.
And my thing about it is that like, you know, you read this press release and there's like, you know, the word community sort of like appears repeatedly. There's this idea of like, you know, when you commit to this idea of, you know, depicting the American West. So it obviously includes indigenous nations and it includes Native Americans and it includes cowboys and it includes everyone, right? And it's like the sort of like 2024 way of doing it is you collaborate with Native Americans. And for example, what he did is like, as I think I said, is like he worked with the Dakota and Lakota nations for some of the embroideries. Like,
okay.
I think there's a few bags that have like the Dakota flower on them. Beautiful. And there's obviously a lot of turquoise across the show. Like,
yep.
All the tailoring almost has turquoise buttons. I think it's interesting because when you put them in the context of the show, it looks beautiful, right? And he worked with people in the community to create part of the soundtrack. And he also worked with Mumford & Sons. It's always like an amalgamation of his obsessions, as Shoma says. But I think what's interesting about this to me is that when people wear these things, they wear them out of context.
Mm.
They don't wear them in the context of the show. They don't wear them with a press release to an extent, right? So I'm curious if it's like, you know, when you're wearing these clothes that are heavily referencing Native American wear and are using also their work, but when, you know, when you take them out of the context of the show and you place them on this like hypebeast guy who's running around, does it translate? Like, does it translate to sort of this very respectful, very like considered way of approaching a culture, or does it look like this guy is just sort of like playing up, dressing ass, you know? And that's always going to be my question when it comes to designers approaching these sort of like hairier conversations and culture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, at the same time, for me in the show, and something that kind of like bothered me is that, yes, you can have this conversation about, you know, the first cowboys were black, or, you know,
that's like, what I saw.
Exactly.
Well.
That
that made me feel quite uplifted, actually.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so like, you can have this really interesting and important conversation about this, which is like, you know, actually workwear like has this beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, it still goes, like, it still looks like a trope to an extent. And it's like, all of these things are always going to be really hard to approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think he sort of pulls it off to the extent where he commits so much to this idea.
Yeah.
And he as a person is also like always so uplifting, I think. And but at the same time, like, this is a time where, you know, Native Americans were getting massacred.
Yeah.
You know, and like, what conversations we're having around this are always, to me, are always going to be more interesting than the fashion in itself.
Mm.
But the bottom line is that the fashion is always worn out of context. I'm curious about that. I don't know what you guys think about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that I imagine people will wear head to toe, you know, and I think it's about once you break it up, take pieces apart and you know, I think, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think it depends on which pieces we're talking about. I think it depends on who's wearing them and how someone pays respects to that culture, you know, and how it's done.
I saw someone, I forgot, on Instagram say this, which I thought was interesting, is that, you know, Pharrell can do this because the persona that he is has always been uplifting, has always been sort of like, it's always approached collaboration. I remember the first time we talked on the pod about him taking this job was that what was exciting was that he's always going to include more people into the mix and like collaborate with more people. So this is the ethos of Pharrell across the board, right? Yeah. So he can do this in a way that people don't necessarily see as problematic. One, because it's always been sort of his thing to like work with other people. And two, because he does it in a way where he's like actually genuinely tapping everyone else to be a part of the conversation, you know? But then again, like we'd have to, you know, take the temperature of what everyone else feels, because I do think that it becomes a wider conversation, but it's interesting. It was a very impactful show to start Paris.
Okay.
Yeah.
We really went deep on that. Jose, I want to know what other shows there were.
I kind of want to talk about Gucci now,
yeah,
because for me it's the kind of the antithesis of that. It felt much more, you know, I think he's obviously setting the gender as like fashion as being practical, architectural, like
he,
you know,
being
very precise.
Sabato De Sarno, who had his first men's show last Friday, the 12th, which did that kick off Milan Wednesday?
Milan. Yeah, it kicked off Milan. It's good that we were sort of like going from Pharrell to Sabato, because it's like going from Alessandro to Sabato, right? Alessandro Michele, who was the creative director of Gucci, is known for being like this magpie of inspiration and culture and, you know, this sort of like the final form of the maximalist designer. But what's interesting about Sabato is that it's almost like he's fully stepping away from that and making, quote unquote, just really good clothes, right? Which is what I find. I've been having so many conversations with designers because that's kind of like, you know, what I do. But it's also
that's
like...
That's my job.
But it's what people keep telling me. Everyone is like, I just want to make really good clothes. And I'm like, babe, we should have been making really good clothes all along.
What does that mean? That means wearable clothes?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. It's like it goes back to the quintessential, right? It's like really... And, you know, Sabato talks about the trench coat and the coat and, like, the way he cuts things. And this is what designers I see are continuously saying more and more of, which is they really want to make just, again, like, quote, unquote, really good, wearable, approachable clothes for your everyday life. And I think Gucci right now has become sort of, like, the face of this just because it's almost, like, so polarizing in terms of what Gucci was versus what Gucci is. What he wants to tell you about is the way he's cut a trench coat. Which is interesting to me as a, like, you know, I have a design background, which is, I love hearing designers talk about the way they cut things. But it's also interesting, I think, as a culture, because when you go from something so maximalist and so driven by storytelling to something that feels almost like a blank canvas, what does that tell about a culture, right? What does it tell about us if we're going from really craving wearing a story to wearing a blank canvas, right? And it's like...
Preach. I've been thinking about this all week.
Like, do we become the story? Like, is it...
There's no world building.
Exactly.
There's no world building.
That's the word. That's exactly... There's no world building. It's really
I love a world build.
Me too.
Me
build
too.
All the worlds.
Take me to another world.
That's what I'm saying. Whatever happened to world building? What happened to fantasy? There's always like... We're entering this... We've entered already, I think... This era of, it's less about the fantasy and more about the clothes, right? Maybe the runway doesn't always have to be about building a fantastic universe, and it has to be about showing really good clothes. And like, for better or for worse, I think this sort of Gucci is like, it portends a shift, I think, in the industry in terms of like what luxury brands are doing.
Yeah. What other men's shows were standouts?
I think Prada is always a conversation, and I
think what was that show? It was looked like a mixture of like American Psycho meets Big and Little Edie.
Love,
I loved it.
So the vibe of the show, I think, has like the best way of explaining the show is the set. So the set was a terrarium at the floor. The floor was an entire terrarium, and then people were sitting on office chairs on top of it. So what it really that there's always a lot of esoteric ideas about around like what a Prada collection is about. You know, what I thought specifically was interesting about this season is that there was this conversation around, like, they were talking about this idea of engaging with the natural world, like in lieu of an artificial world. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always like we've had endless conversations about AI and whatever. But I think what like the core of this is sort of like, you know, you how do you engage with the natural world in your daily life? Like, how do you go? Do you go outside? Do you go touch grass? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think it was a funny way of contextualizing it because you have the terrarium, you have the office chairs, and then you have, you know, the men in like slim trousers, jackets, like a full suit basically with ties, but a swimming cap or like,
I mean, those caps.
Exactly. Which I thought was honestly fab styling. It was really fun.
Yeah. And the double belts.
The double belts. Exactly. Or like the wider belt. It was really good styling, I thought. So Prada was another big one. And Fendi was also interesting because it was a similar inspiration to an extent. Similar perspective, if you will, in fashion, where it was like it was this contrast between the metropolitan uniform versus the bucolic like countryside uniform. A lot of Princess Anne inspiration at, you know, Balmoral, is it? I watched The Crown, but it was very that vibe, which I thought was fab. I also find interesting that this is the season of the skort. I've seen two skorts already on the men's runways, which is fascinating.
Whoa.
Because
would you wear a skort?
I would, because I love a skirt. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. But it's funny because I think, you know, the skirt was like such a big thing on the men's runways over the last 4 or 5 seasons because everyone was like, oh my God, everyone's wearing skirts. And now I feel like, there's nothing to subvert about the skirt on a runway anymore.
Okay.
You know, like, so now it's like, okay, so how do you make them different? How do you play them up? Like once you sort of reach this height of like all of these brands that are bigger, that are more mainstream, committing to these aesthetics, like, what's the next thing to subvert? You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I feel like we've graduated from the skirt to the skort, and then we'll go back to the pant.
I will pose another question, which is that we've covered menswear very comprehensively, but I want to know not only what are people going to wear to the Oscars, but what is Usher going to wear for the Super Bowl?
To the Super Bowl.
Because that is such a good question.
We just dropped our Usher digital winter cover. Which I actually, it's Ooh. Maybe one of my favorite covers of the year. I think it is so, such a fun image.
You're
the
biased.
Story is great.
You love him. You love
I
him.
I love him. But Alessandra Cudina wrote a great, really fun story, and the pictures are fantastic. It's Campbell Addy and Max Ortega who styled it. It was shot in Vegas with Carolyn Murphy and a group of young, adorable little football players.
It's so cute.
And now I'm really excited for the Super Bowl. Who thought?
I know. Who thought?
Oh my God, the little kids are just...
The little kids are so cute.
I mean, my heart is melting.
I am very... He does wear a lot of Dolce & Gabbana, I feel. So I feel like we're going to see
some of
that.
You know, he wears a lot of Rick Owens too.
But,
and
yeah,
Bianca Sand.
He was also at Marnie.
He was.
He had a really good run at the Ready to Wear shows in September. That is very true. So I'm very excited because I think what I really enjoyed about this era of Usher is that I feel like he's a fan of fashion.
Totally.
And I love.
We learned that on the pod firsthand, Choma.
His archive is popping. We
really?
Should go to it one day.
Yeah. Where's that video?
My God.
Objects of My Affection.
Yeah.
I generally think like we definitely covered menswear so comprehensively right now, but I think it's also because it's become such an important part of fashion. I think
it really
when
has.
I, when
it's
I was
more
coming
agenda
up,
setting than it's ever been.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, suddenly I'm like, these shows make, they're having much more impact.
You know, from celebrities to the Travis Kelce's and like all the athletes, like people are actually, like men are very interested in fashion and dressing, what fashion can do for them. So I'm excited about the Super Bowl too.
Jose, woof, I feel like we're really covered menswear in great and wonderful detail, and I hope everyone has appreciated it as much as we have. And
my brain is buzzing.
Same. Well, thank you for having me.
The run-through will be back in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Emisha Gormley.
We are two best friends with one common obsession.
Beauty.
And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful. We tried it all and we've got your back. We'll be calling on all our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions. Consider us your beauty 411 and sometimes your 911.
From how to fix brassy hair
to the pros and cons of laser facials
and always with a cocktail in hand.
Always. So be prepared to be obsessed. Check out Lipstick on the Rim wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. And we're back.
And now we actually have an interview with Pharrell Williams, which is really exciting. After all of our hyping and many discussions about his Western-inspired Louis Vuitton menswear show.
Yes, and our colleagues at Vogue China got to sit down with Pharrell recently after his Hong Kong show. Margaret Zhang is the editor-in-chief of Vogue China, and Yiling Pan covers business for the magazine.
And they also host a podcast about Chinese fashion and culture called Good Morning Vogue China. It's released in both English and Chinese, so you should subscribe.
Margaret and Yiling talked to Pharrell at the Louis Vuitton store in Beijing when he was in China to show his pre-fall collection.
Right, and this was the collection that had all those nautical and island influences. I love hearing in the conversation about he talks, you know, about finding his inspiration for his collections and how he describes his role as creative director as being like a conductor for a massive orchestra.
Thrilled. What are your impressions? You've done so many cities in a couple of days, no?
I've said this many times, but it began with us going to Hong Kong. As you know, Vuitton is like, it's a world-class traveler's brand, mm-hmm. right? So it's a fashion house, but it's like...
Travel DNA.
Yes, really all about traveling. And so, you know, being on this journey, you know, after Paris, the second stop was mm-hmm. naturally like Hong Kong. And it made a lot of sense. It's like, you think about like, all the support that I've gotten throughout all of my professional career from my Asian siblings, you know, music, art, design, anything that I was doing, like, you know, Hong Kong just made sense because it's like, it's not only like, you know, one of the major arteries of like the world economy, mm-hmm. but it's also like a place that like we visited before the pandemic happened. And so we watched that whole thing. The whole thing happened. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like, you know, not just Hong Kong, but like the greater China as well. Like, I feel like this is y'all's time. You know, it's your time. And it's a really beautiful thing to see.
I mean, it being that this bringing together of people, it was almost a huge reunion of the entire creative community of the Eastern Hemisphere. In a way, we're seeing people that we hadn't seen for years. It was a real kind of return on yourself as a curator of cultural communities. And I'm curious to hear, how do you feel about the importance of fashion's role in being culturally relevant or even shaping culture?
You know, I hesitate to put responsibility on anyone or even sectors. Now, that being said, I do think that fashion can be an agent mm-hmm. of galvanizing and of enlightening people. I think it can be an agent, but I hesitate to put that kind of like responsibility on anyone. But it's always beautiful when art can do that, and art does do that.
But then what do you think your role is in like playing this part? Like you said, like, you don't want to put responsibility on any brand or any person, but you agree that it's actually having an impact
yeah.
in shaping culture. Yeah. So what do you think you are playing in that part?
I think my job is to galvanize. Mm. My job is to bring people together. Lead by example. You know, for me, I see the beauty and the difference in people. I think that which makes you different is what makes you special.
That's an interesting point you make about a creative director role as a lens on the world or lens on communities that are happening around you. And I think in this moment, there's a lot of confusion about what a creative director actually is, because in different ecosystems and different markets, it means a different thing. What would you say is your view on, you know, Louis Vuitton is a house with codes and heritage. Do you see your role as kind of connecting that past, like vibrant, rich past with the future in some way, kind of being that bridging force?
I work with 55 different departments, over 2,500 soldiers. I call them soldiers. but this is like a love movement. But you have to conduct. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a huge orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's my job is to make sure that like everything is in harmony and to weed out any of the dissonance. And that's been such a pleasure. You know, masterful artisans I'm surrounded by. So like, it's great.
You know, it's very interesting for me that you mentioned harmony, this word, so many times, because harmony is actually a very important concept in Chinese culture as well. Like, we care about this. And also love in a general term is also something like China is trying to embrace a lot in our modern culture. But then I think you're aware that in the fashion industry and creative industry, there has been a lot of discussion about a lack of diversity and inclusion at different levels. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, like, what do you think is the change that is necessary to happen in order to tackle the current issue or just make the fashion system become better?
That's interesting. You know, that's a question that really boils down to like equality, your question. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's an interesting answer that has nothing to do with equality. It's equity. It's having more people of color to have their own businesses and to have their own brands and for the consumer base to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're really gonna diversify in this world. Like what we can't do as people of color is continue to try to find a seat at a table where we may or may not be welcome.
Sure. Mm.
My whole thing is like, there's room under the sun for everyone. Why don't we just build our own tables,
mm-hmm.
right?
And in this role, how do you find opportunities to empower people to build their own tables, so to speak?
Well, we do that with Black Ambition,
mm-hmm.
which the House is very supportive of. It's run by like Felicia Hatcher. And they're like totally crushing it. But that provides like strategic scaffolding and resources to Black and brown concepts. And I think we just need more of that. You know, again, equality is awesome. You know, our parents and their parents and their parents, they fought for equality.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, equity is much more formidable and powerful.
You know, I think it's interesting what you say because you're right in this moment that Asian voices, the whole Eastern Hemisphere, a lot of generations of work of creative culture, and in China, certainly thousands of years of creative culture, we feel is kind of concentrating in this moment and manifesting in this moment where, you know, we've just had our Vogue China Fashion Fund, inaugural Fashion Fund winners announced recently. And it's the first time that we've really felt the world is paying attention to these new Chinese creative voices. And I know that they'd be so curious to hear from you what advice you have for them as creatives.
Oh, first and foremost, you know, focus on your light. Be creative. None of this matters if you're not doing something that is really interesting and striking.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on that. And with the ubiquitous nature of the internet, everyone's connected, so it'll get out there. You know, there's no such thing as the greatest kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
I find that like, you know, the Chinese culture, Asian culture at large, but the Chinese culture and the Black culture have a lot in common.
They do.
Right? Like very creative, very inspiring.
Family first.
But yeah, family. But then like we suffer a lot of like the same setbacks. And sometimes purposeful disadvantages and blockages. And, you know, it's interesting. It's like, if we just continue to focus on being great, it's very different than it was 30, 40 years ago.
Sure.
You know, everything was like in a vacuum. But now, like I said, because of the internet, it's different. If you're really talented, they will find you. Somebody will find you. Somebody will get behind you. And I mean, you know, just being over here and just seeing everything that's going on, man, it's really your time. It's your time. Like, nothing is stopping you.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then, I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
I was wondering, you also said that there are a lot of setbacks that people might experience during the process, that they're trying to fight their light or do things that they think is right. So what kind of mindset they should have in order to keep focusing on like fighting their light?
Well, those blockages and those purposeful disadvantages are set up in a system that you don't really need. You don't need it anymore. We used to. Mm. It's like for a very long time, the record industry would make you feel like they were the complete gateway for people to know you. And now you have more artists making music that are not signed to a label and making so much money. There's just a natural democracy and an advantage, if you know what you're doing, that the internet can offer you. And I'm saying, what blockages exist for you if you are not adhering to a system or trying to fit in a system or asking someone who is a major player in the system for help? I mean, this route was for me, but it may not be for everybody. But that doesn't mean that you can't create your own lane and be much more successful than I could ever dream of being. Just like a changing of the guard.
That makes sense. I mean, do you feel that social media as an ecosystem has a negative or positive or indifferent impact on luxury as a category now that you're running this ship?
I think good, bad, and indifferent.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
In what sense?
I mean, it's good in certain ways, is not so good in other ways. And then there's a part of it where it just kind of like doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that like there's a lot of artists that are born in social media. And I think there's a lot of fashion designers that are born in social media, and they sort of design for the gram, you know, and there are artists that make music for the gram. It's like a very different thing, but it's fine.
But you don't feel...
I'm not a fashion designer.
Sure. Okay. How would you classify yourself if not a fashion designer?
Oh, creative director for sure. Yeah.
And how, just for our audience to understand, how does that distinction manifest?
Well, there are many different types of like creative directors. I am one that's much more like a conductor.
Sure.
I present a vision, and then I work with the teams to like bring it to fruition. Sometimes it's sketches that I'll do, you know. Other times there's references, you know. We give a big presentation every time, you know, very in-depth presentation, because I'm attention to detail. That's like my whole thing. And when I first came to the house, when I sat down with Bernard Arnault, the first thing I did was lay down like the five different pillars of what I wanted, what I saw the house doing with my leadership. And then we talked about like core elements and codes that I wanted to change and essentially level up from where they were. And he agreed on all of it. And everything that you guys are seeing are all the things that I've presented.
And this Hawaiian or island vacation that you brought to Hong Kong, how does that vehicle kind of empower the creatives in your community or the consumer? What's the conversation that it starts?
Well, it's a pre-collection, right? And usually there's no shows around pre-collections. And there's not a lot of shows around pre-collections.
Sure.
At least for us, usually pre-collections are like, you know, a lot of beige, a lot of like navy blue, a lot of black, a lot of gray. And it's very like middle-aged, like professional guy on the go, you know? It's like a character on Succession or something.
Sexy.
And I was like, you know, let's level it up. Mm-hmm. Let's make this pre-collection feel like it's one of the main shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to shake the tree a bit, you know, because I think that can, because it's also like, it's where they do a big bulk of the business because it's so like middle of the road and centrist.
Sure.
But I still wanted to shake it up a bit so that we are leveling, you know, the consumer up. So there's a lot of incorporation of a lot of pearls. There's a lot of embroidery. This jacket is like, you know.
I was looking at your jacket.
Yeah, this jacket is going to be, this is made to order.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this was like to commemorate my trip here mm-hmm. in China. So it just starts.
Oh, okay.
You've often talked about how much of the Eastern Hemisphere culture has influenced your creative work, even before this role, far before this role. I think you were one of the early creatives to really come out here and explore very early on. Who are those Asian background teachers, forever mentors to you?
I mean, they're different people. There's SK, Takeshi Murakami,
mm-hmm.
Nigo-san, of course. Listen, I love Mr. Nobu's food. I always will.
Okay.
Yoon On, Verbal. I mean, these are all people who made like really serious, like lasting impressions.
Impacts, yeah.
On me.
And what would you say is the common thread of their approach to their work?
Oh, these are all people who like, you know, they see it, they think it, they make it manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are all practitioners of like fruition.
I mean, you have been heading up this menswear department for WeChang for a while. How do you perceive menswear category in 2023 and how do you see it evolved going forward?
For me, I know on paper it's menswear, but I just make clothes for humans. I learned that, you know, being over at Chanel, I used to wear things that I felt like I could pull off. Not because they were less effeminate, but if I thought I could wear it, then I would wear it. You know, a sweater here or mm-hmm. a belt there or whatever. And I used to wear Celine when Phoebe was there. Like, I wore a lot of that. I was super early on that. But I think that's my job, right? That's my responsibility to bring that energy to this menswear appointment, is to make clothes for humans.
And do you see that as an overall direction for the whole menswear category? It's less defined, more fluid?
Yeah. I think they get nervous when you start putting that kind of, you know, language around it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so weird, though. It's like, you know, sometimes, like, culture lets you know what it wants to be.
Mm.
And I know why we have been welcoming, not accepting.
It's sure.
a very big difference between
facts,
welcoming and accepting, right? Some people are accepting.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been very welcoming to humans. I think they just always want me to be respectful and not step on the toes of, like, you know, the women's department. Be respectful of our siblings there.
Sure.
But I pride myself on just, like, making things for humans.
And to wrap up, what excites you about the future?
God. There's nothing more exciting than that.
That's a great answer.
I mean, but right though, it's the universe. Like, where are we without it? Like, it's just not even possible. But the idea that the universe continues to provide me with these opportunities that I can't put into words, just like dreams, it's amazing. I'm so grateful.
Grateful for you to be here with us today. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show this week.
Bye. You like it? Special thanks to our Vogue China colleagues, Margaret Zhang, Yiling Pan, Raymond Fu, Audrey Siegel, and Sienna Guo. Subscribe to their show, Good Morning Vogue China, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and mixed by Mike Kutchman. We'll see you next week, and it's couture.
Yep, on my way on Sunday.
Hey,
Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.